Hello, I'm Nigel, and welcome to the Crew of Japan podcast, a weekly podcast where we take you on audio journeys through Japanese culture. Welcome back to our podcast. Since this episode is being released right before Halloween, we decided to take a more supernatural or spooky journey this week. That's right, we're diving deep into the world of yokai. If you've never heard of yokai, you're in for a real treat. Yokai have existed for hundreds and hundreds of years in Japan, and generally can be defined as supernatural spirits that can either be helpful and instructful, or downright scary and haunting. There's much more to what yokai are, though. In this episode, we're going to unpack all of that and more, from what yokai are and how they originated, to what makes yokai different from ghost and other folklore and other cultures around the world, all the way to our favorite yokai and places where you can actually visit in Japan, which are said to host yokai. On this week's journey, we're joined by Hiroko Yoda and Matt Ault, the authors of Yokai Attack, the Japanese Monster Survival Guide. It's a must-read if you want to learn anything about yokai. And Hiroko and Matt are experts on the subject that we are honored to have as our guests and guides this week. Without further ado, let's dive right into the world of yokai.
All right, welcome back to the podcast. So today we have Hiroko Yoda and Matt Ault with us to discuss everything yokai. And of course we have Nigel on the call as well.
Oh, well, that was a bit sad. Of course we have Nigel on the call as well.
What's sad is that Doug could sadly not be with us tonight, but...
But only for the best of reasons.
True. You know. True. But that's why we have Matt here to kind of tease in.
Ah, yes, I'm the hype man on this podcast. I'll be the mood maker. But this is mainly... I want Hiroko to take center stage here. She's the one who...
Definitely.
She brainwashed me about yokai many years
that's
ago.
Right.
So maybe she can brainwash right. all the rest of the world too.
Yeah, definitely because, like, you know, when... I think of yokai, it's like, I'm an enthusiast of yokai. I find it so interesting. And, you know, Hiroko, you did the book Yokai Attack, the
yes.
Japanese Monster Survival Guide, which I find to be such an awesome accomplishment on your own anyway.
Thank you.
That is just awesome. You know, I introduced you, but can you kind of give our audience a brief introduction of yourself, you know, where you're from in Japan and, you know, kind of like who you are?
My name is Hiroko Yoda. Matt and I run a company called Alt Japan Co. Limited. We are doing a localization mainly. We translate from Japanese to English, main game software, manga, and books. But we do other stuff, including writing books, Yokai Attack, the Japanese Monster Survival Guide. Actually, the one you told me that you are the yokai enthusiast, that really brightened my day. Because before the 2008, we published the Yokai Attack. Nobody outside the world knew what yokai was. And that's exactly why we wanted to. I really wanted to, because I brainwashed Matt. So I just dragged him into my own world. But we wanted to bring something really enjoyable to the world. And it's what you just said is really means something to me. So thank you.
yay, I'm so glad. Well, yeah, no, I'm always like into spooky stuff, and especially like Japanese. I don't know, something about Japan. Mm-hmm. They have some really like nice spooky stuff going on over there, and I love it. And I always enjoy when like I can find someone to nerd out about it with. So I'm glad you're here, Hiroko. You're like my girl for that.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, and this is very perfectly timed because this episode is being released during the Halloween season.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so this is a very spooky
Perfect.
Themed episode for our listeners.
Well, before we get into the meat of things, you know, something that we ask all of our guests is kind of like their connection to New Orleans, and if they have any. If, you know, can you describe to us your connection to the city, if you have one? But if you don't, maybe you can, like, let us know when you hear the word New Orleans being said, you know, what do you think of?
Okay. So before Matt and I visited New Orleans, the first thing that popped in my head was soul food. And voodoo.
Two solid things.
And those two things. Yes. 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 But when we visited there, I quickly realized that city is cultural and historical wonderland. And I instantly loved it. And my favorite place, the memory that I have in New Orleans, is the Museum of Mardi Gras Indians.
Oh, that's cool.
I had a great time. I thought that was fascinating. And also, I don't drink. I'm just pathetically weak. So the drinking part.
I don't drink either.
You are my girlfriend.
Yeah, same here.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, good. Well, so I don't drink. So the drinking part is just quickly out of the window. And so we just go to bed. And then, but another favorite thing to do in the city is having a morning walk. The streets are just totally clean out with water, and then the shining, and then the sunlight, and then walking on the riverside with a cup of coffee. What was it, the coffee?
Yes, from Café du Monde.
Yes.
And beignets.
And beignets, and then what was the coffee?
The chicory.
Chicory, yes.
Yeah, you can't get that in Japan.
Yeah, and so so we loved it. I loved it.
Yeah, we've been twice. We visited, the most recently was what, 2019?
Oh, okay.
The winter of 2019. Both times in the winter, which is not like typically like the time people visit New Orleans.
Yeah, but that was probably a good move because summers can be pretty excruciating.
Yeah, oh, I bet. But yeah, a lot of, like Hiroko says, early morning walks and things like that. Although, you know, early morning walks, like you associate like in other cities with it being totally quiet, but you'll be walking past a bar and it's still like, it's still going strong at 5:30 a.m. You know, it's you can find food though at like 5:30 a.m. It's no problem to find, you know, a place to eat. So that's like a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Yay. That makes me happy that you'll have like this little connection to New Orleans. And I figured the voodoo would come up because, like Hiroko said, the spooky stuff. So yeah, we got that here as well. So yep, we got that little connection between Japan and New Orleans, how we both have our own spooky stuff going
That's
on.
That's right.
Yeah, totally. So I'm interested to know, Hiroko, what got you interested in publishing your work on yokai?
Okay, I loved yokai ever since I was a little child. I loved spooky things. Scary things, mysterious things. And I was that kind of the girl who deliberately searched for dark places inside house and tried to find yokai. But before 2008, I realized that almost everything of the Japanese things like cards, anime, Pokemon, the concept of samurai, sushi, geisha, Mount Fuji, all kind of stuff it went outside. But yokai wasn't. And the yokai was so popular in my country, in Japan. If you ask, of course, the level of knowledge is different, but from little child to the elders, everybody know what yokai are. But almost nobody knew what yokai is or yokai are outside Japan. So that's why I dragged Matt. There's these things called yokai. It's fun stuff. And if you like robots, if you like toys, characters, you would love yokai. And he immediately fell in love with it. And so we contact publisher and pitch it. And we published the book. And brutally honest, I really wanted to, back in time, I really wanted to be a queen of yokai. And then just being cheerleader. And once again, I can't emphasize more than enough that it's such fascinating to hear what you said. It's just you are yokai enthusiast. It just brightened my day.
Well, I remember, I remember Hiroko bringing home all of these books of Japanese yokai art, because there's a lot of like woodblock prints and like scrolls.
Yeah, there are.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And there's like entire exhibitions of yokai art here in Japan, and it's just amazing. And so when I first started looking at this stuff back in the early 2000s, in the aughts, I was like, wow, this is like really mondo, crazy, wild stuff. And, you know, when we started looking for material in English, just like Hiroko says, there was none back then. There was literally, it's hard to believe now because like Yokai Watch and like, you know, Demon Slayer.
I know, there's so much yokai in modern media right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you said none, but that's not really correct. In game software.
Sure.
See, Kappa, the humanoid yokai, looks like a turtle,
he's in games,
frog.
Sure.
He's in game.
Yeah.
And but so the people think that that's the character, copyrighted character
in the game,
for a certain game.
Yeah.
You know, or Mario's Tanuki suit.
Yes. Yeah. That's another example.
Yeah.
So it went, but it did, people outside Japan had no idea. Yeah. And it was just only one character, like Mickey Mouse or...
Yeah, there was no way to contextualize it.
Exactly. Exactly. And I really wanted to do that so that the Japanese and non-Japanese can communicate and then talk about yokai.
Yeah. And I think your book is a really great jumping off point and an introduction for people who have seen these things like Mario's Tanuki suit and are looking to really engage and understand even more about it. So for all our listeners out there, buy the book. I know you might not say it, but we got to go ahead and get it out there. It's called Yokai Attack, the Japanese Monster Survival Guide. And it's really great if you really want to, like I said, engage with the material and go further than what you see on the surface in video games and manga and in anime. Yes.
Oh, I have another fun example.
Oh, go for it.
Sushi restaurant, the cucumber roll. They call it kappa roll.
Yes. Ah.
Okay. Why they don't call, they say, you know, the mackerel roll or, you know, avocado roll. They use a material's name and then for every other sushi. But cucumber roll? It's not cucumber roll. Kappa, it's a roll. Kappa roll. And that came from yokai.
Yep.
The kappa.
Yep.
Wow.
The frog-like humanoid, the yokai. And the cucumber is his favorite food. In Japanese, for the Japanese people, we know that, like a dog. You know, but if you don't know what kappa is.
Yeah, then you don't get it. You're right. Yeah.
Exactly. And then we had actually a friend who came from America to Japan. He's vegan. He went to the grocery store and he wanted to buy a cucumber. And then he didn't know. Of course, he doesn't speak Japanese. So I was like, please, kappa, please. And then these people just laughed.
Yeah, they must have been like,
and
what
of
is
course
this
they laughed. They immediately knew what he wanted, but
it's a strange way to communicate it.
It's kind of ironic that the two most popular, if you want to call them beginner sushis, for people who are kind of just getting started in it, are kappamaki and inari sushi.
Right.
You know, it's like rice, kind of rice in the sweetened tofu, I guess,
curd.
Skin. And inari sushi is also kind of related to yokai.
Yes.
In the sense, it's fox. Yeah, it's fox's favorite. So, like, it's kind of funny. The two most popular, you know, beginner sushi are both named after yokai, which are concepts that Westerners didn't get for a long time. You know, everything else is just like, I'd like, you know, maguro, which is tuna, you know, but and you could just order it. But those.
The inari, it's not a food name.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I know that the nerd me knows all this information, but for me to be able to like hear it from someone else, that's amazing, because not many people, like you said, not many people know these things. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I do, but I want other people to appreciate it as well. And that kind of brings me to kind of like my next thing is kind of like, what is yokai? Because I remember my first interaction with Japanese yokai, and it was in 2009. I went to Disney World for my graduation present. And at Disney World in Epcot, they have the World Showcase where, you know, different lands from different countries.
Right.
And, you know, I love Japan. So the first place I needed to go was the Japan section of Epcot. Like, it just needed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went with my family, you know, pretty much dragging them to the Japan section. And it's amazing because the section for Japan, you know, it don't has any rides. There's no rides, but there's a huge, massive store. And then on side of the store is like almost like this mini museum. And so in 2009, I remember going into this mini museum and it was about yokai. And they had this huge Tengu statue in the middle. Amazing for me to see, because I look up, I'm like, oh, this is so cool. And so like I'm going around the museum, I'm learning about all the yokai from Japan. And I go out of the museum, I'm like, I need to go to Japan. Like, this is awesome.
Yeah, actually, yeah, I went there when I was a little kid. I went there when I was a little kid too, and like, but there was nothing that deep. Yeah, I mean, because Epcot's been around since the 80s.
Yeah, it has.
So when my parents took me as like a, God, I must have been a junior high school kid. I remember the big torii, but there was no yokai back then. So this is really amazing to hear about.
Well,
this.
There's no yokai now either.
I see.
I remember I went back to Disney in maybe like 2012 or something like that. And they switched it to kawaii culture. So now they have a kawaii culture museum over there. But it saddened me that the yokai got, you know, it's gone. And I enjoyed it so much. But, oh, well, you know, what are you going to do?
They come and they go.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
It's 2009.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. They read your book. And then they were like,
yeah.
Probably. Yeah.
So, you know, when... Before that, though, I didn't know what yokai were. And sadly, the, you know, the anime or manga that I was reading back in the day before I went there, I didn't really read anything about yokai in those manga or watch any of those anime with yokai in it. So that was literally like my first impression of yokai. And I just fell in love and it stuck with me since then.
Okay. So yokai are characters from Japanese folklore. Japan has a long history of animism and polytheism, and people believed everything surrounding them had spirits. The sun, the wind, and trees, and ground, and even the houses, even the part of houses, the doors, roofs, and pillars, and had spirits. And yokai are the part of that worldview. And they are personification of things that scare us. They take many forms. Some are humanoid, some are animals, objects, and mythical creatures. And they are the characterization of natural phenomena and unexplainable things. But the key thing is that the yokai are not ghosts. A ghost in Japanese are yurei, and yurei are someone, and yokai are something, and that's the key.
So like how did yokai like I don't know come about? Like you said, like people would imagine like, you know, objects kind of having like a presence in a sense, but like, you know, did this belief just come out of like a religion, or was this made up to scare kids maybe? Because like when I think of scary stories in like the US, you know, it mostly comes from, you know, wanting to scare the heck out of the kids and, you know, making sure that they're good kids and they're not bad. So I'm just kind of like, you know, where does yokai like come from, you know?
There's so many layers of the concept of yokai. It basically depends on which era you're talking about.
Yeah. I know.
I mean, we have like a history of more than 1,000 years. The yokai-like stories go back more than 1,000 years. And at first, they were oral traditions and local legends. Then, they started around the 16th century, the painting scrolls with yokai motifs starting getting made. But that the big boom came in Edo period, the late 18th century. An artist, Toriyama Sekien, he compiled the first encyclopedia of yokai and published it as a book. And that became his hit. And then that book, and then they were... the Toriyama Sekien's book is actually responsible for the characterization, for the yokai as characters, what I'm saying, yokai as characters. And that the most important thing that we have to say here is that we, Matt and I, translated the Sekien's book. I mean, that book was published more than 240 years ago.
1776.
Okay. Wow. So you can imagine how difficult that was, but yeah. We did it. And we translated it in English, and they called Japan Demonium Illustrated, wow. And we published in 2016.
Wow.
Awesome.
Yeah, and that's a key moment, because up until that point, I think yokai had mainly been superstitions. I think that's the best way of thinking about it. Some of them were to scare kids, like, you know, don't play by the river because the kappa will get you. You know, I'm sure some of them had that kind of angle, but they're basically superstitions. And then what Sekien did was take those superstitions and basically commercialize them, you know, and made this huge popular, you know, book series out of them. So
yeah, there'd be in the 15th century, around 15th century, when the scrolls, the painted scrolls are getting made, the yokai motif are basically standalone. In a long paper, and then say just one character, one yokai, one yokai
parading.
Parading. But it's just the yokai themselves. But what the Sekien, the artist in Edo era artist, did was that he gave each yokai background, habitat, and then it's a different take from the past too. Yeah. Thousands of years ago, the yokai are more related to religion, or really scary things.
Yeah.
But today, it's fun stuff. So, like you said, the yokai are used to caution kids. That's one aspect. Okay. The yokai use as a characterization of unexplainable things or natural phenomena. Back in time, we don't know. People didn't know why the thunder created. Now today we know, but back in time they didn't know. So there was anger of something or manifestation of whatever, and then that's yokai characterization.
Yeah.
So it's really layers, and it depends on which time period you're talking about, and meanings just getting
different. Absolutely. So I have two questions for you. One, how long did it take to translate Sekien's?
Oh gosh. Well, it's a year, right?
That's awesome.
But we are killing each other. Because the person passed away 240 years ago. So I'm more than 240 years ago. So we can't ask. And then also, when I started reading a lot closely, I realized that everything in his
illustrations
has meaning. It's a quote from, say, No Play, or the books from China, the legend of. And then also, of course, it's some kind of a social satire in that time period. So we really had to dive into his mode.
Yeah.
And then try to see why he drew this tiny part, why he chose this flower. Okay. Cat, for example, the Nekomata.
It's a cat
yokai with two tails.
Mm-hmm.
And the Sekien drew the two cats, three cats, I don't remember. Multiple cats were trying to transform into something. And then it's obvious that two-tailed cat was teaching to novice cat. And that's that kind of things going on. But what really grabbed me attention is that those cats are standing in front of a certain plant called Hagi flower, which is typical bloom in autumn. Okay, so why he didn't draw, say, Liddy, or why he didn't cherry blossom? Why he chose the Hagi plant? There's a reason for it. And so, of course, today is the 21st century, so I quickly Googled it, searched it on the internet.
Yeah.
And then I found a city called Hagi in a different prefecture. The name of the specific prefecture, but it's but there's a Hagi city. And then I found out that there's actually ghost story about cats. And the samurai had a pet cat. And then the samurai passed away. Cat was searching for the owner. And meowing, meowing, meowing. And then eventually the cat died in front of his grave. And after that, every night, the people started hearing the cat meowing. But today is the 21st century. Of course, Japanese create everything characters. So there's a fuzzy little cat mascot called Hagi-nya. Yeah. And then it just the city's the tourist website, the Hagi-nya face is everywhere.
Right.
But anyway, the point is the story was much matched when Seikien was alive. So I can ask him, but probably there's a high chance that he chose a flower they used to have because the cat connections. And so anyway, there are 12 volumes because, like I said before, his work was hugely popular. So he created 12 volumes. So you can imagine each part. So I sit down all day staring like one page, one page. And of course that some has a explanation, which it's still deciphering the codes. And then we put the explanation, we wrote down explanations so that people can understand.
Annotations,
people can understand. But, there's more ideas came in. It's like we threw that away, rewrote it. And
yeah.
But, the biggest thing is it's not even written in modern Japanese. That's the other thing. It's written in a big chunk of it, the most of it is written in what's called Kusushi-ji, which is a handwritten font that is really difficult to read without training. And so we had to first find modern transliterations of it, but there weren't modern transliterations of big chunks of it. So we actually had to hire experts to transliterate into a font that could then be deciphered. And then other big chunks of it are written in what's called kanbun,
yes,
which is Chinese. Wow. It's basically like using nothing but kanji phonetically to spell out Japanese. And that was seen as like the super literary, intellectual way of writing for many centuries in Japan.
Yeah.
And it was kind of falling out of favor, I think, by Edo, but Seikien put it into big sections because it's kind of cool, you know? And we're like, oh my God. So we worked with another expert in kanbun on that, but it was a real.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It was pretty wild.
It wasn't for money. It just, we wanted to do it.
Wow.
Yeah. A labor of love.
Yeah. Exactly.
Exactly.
Love to yoga.
That's pandemonium.
It's pandemonium illustrated.
Yeah. Wow.
Nice.
So before I get to my main question, I said I had two. The other one, small question is, did Seikien ever claim ownership over any of the stories?
No.
Yeah, that's key.
It's a key. Okay. No, he didn't.
Okay, wow.
In fact, the Seikien is, what's it called in English? Uncelebrated?
Wow. Yeah, he's kind of not really well known. In Japan. Like, if you look in like a Japanese encyclopedia, it's like, oh, he trained Kuniyoshi, or like, he trained Utamaro. Because he had a lot of famous disciples. But no, he didn't. And most of them are like his interpretations of very public, very popular, well-known stories. It isn't until like the very last volume of his books that he starts making up yokai of his own.
Okay.
But even then, there's no like copyright Seikien. Do you know what
I
mean?
That's what
it's
I
like
was wondering.
Those kind of, back in time in Edo period. So like there wasn't any copyright. So then you start seeing his characters showing up in all sorts of other works.
Yeah, which actually we're going to touch upon later, that the anime, Mizuki Shigeru's anime, Gegege no Kitaro. Those are the many of the yokai characters that he drew in that series. is actually based on Sagan's work.
Sagan's work, wow.
Okay. Yeah, so you knew, but you just didn't know. You know.
Yeah, wow. Okay. So that one, that's amazing.
Yeah.
My actual question is, we've talked about where yokai like originate from and how they came about and that the era that they were, you know, really gained prominence. But how and why do you think they are still popular today?
In the beginning, before the Edo period, the yokai were connected to religion and society at faces of all kinds of misfortune. In Edo, these stories started to become commercial as books, print, kabuki shows, and things like that. So today they are popular characters.
Yeah, I find in today's like portrayal of yokai, I feel like it's not a negative or positive portrayal. It's kind of like a both. Like, depending on what medium and what story, like, it can go either way, honestly.
Yeah. Well, they're more spooky than they are, like, terrifying.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So they're kind of like creeps more than they are like, oh my God, I'm going to die kind of like thing. That's Yurei. Like, you know, the Yurei, when you think of like J horror from the turn of the 20th century into the 21st century, those are all like ghosts. You know, there aren't really yokai. They're yokai.
Yokai are basically weak. Yokai are weak. Yeah. They don't have much power. They're mischievous. But they never truly scary.
So they're not the grudge.
Yeah. No.
You know, if you encountered something and if you fought whatever, probably you would win. And so, but the interesting part of the word yokai is that the yokai, believe me or not, it's a pretty modern term. Before that, they called them like bakemono or ayakashi. The yokai, the term was popular since the really late Edo era.
Oh,
today the yokai, the word yokai, it's a common thing. But back in time, the term the yokai, the concept existed.
Yeah.
But that the word is the modern term.
So it became popular really in the 1960s with Mizuki Shigeru's Kitaro, the anime. He is the one who took the word yokai and made it like a really popular term. Like Hiroko was saying, up until that point, it was mainly obake or bakemono and stuff. The concept's basically the same. But the word yokai is really kind of modern vintage.
Yeah, because you know the Sekien's book get really popular. And the yokai was a huge part of the entertainment things. But then, you know, after that, we know that the World War, you know, the wars happened. And then, of course, you know, and all the entertainment died. But after the war, then the Mizuki Shigeru, the manga artist, he took the yokai from Sekien, and he created the manga, Kitaro. And then that turned into animation, the anime, Gegege no Kitaro, and it became very popular, and in its popular series, and even they show today. And I, in the 70s, the Gegege no Kitaro was really popular. And then I, as a kid, I watched it. And and so it's definitely the Mizuki's work, the Gegege no Kitaro anime, gave me influence too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, no, it was huge in this. I mean, there was a huge boom for yokai in the late 60s because
he brought it back.
That was the original kind of Pokemon boom, so to speak, you know, like, and Pokemon takes a lot from Kitaro. Pokemon takes a lot from the yokai.
Yeah.
So there's that kind of connection. It's not direct. It's a dotted line.
Yeah, definitely.
It's not like a straight line, but there's definitely a dotted line connecting like Sekien's work to modern day stuff. Because think about how almost every like Pokemon has an encyclopedia too, the Pokédex.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like encyclopedias are still, and in Kitaro, it's all about him meeting yokai and kind of like learning about them and kind of either conquering them or making them friends. So you can see all of these sort of similarities in this pop cultural work starting from the Edo period. But it's interesting. Sekien never uses the word yokai.
No, he used
it once. In all 12 volumes of his book, he only uses yokai once. And it's not even really used in the way that we use yokai. He's using it to mean like strange phenomenon, not strange creature. Yeah.
So, today it's a character, but it's
different
usage back then.
So.
Well, I learned something new today.
Yeah,
that's nice. Okay, yeah. That's great.
No, it's funny because yokai have this image of being something ancient, which they are, but the actual word used to refer to them is only a little over kind of a century old in common
that's
usage.
Crazy.
But I have to say, but that's a nerdy talk here, okay? if you grab somebody out of the street in Japan and say, did you know that the term yokai is actually new? People probably don't know that, okay? So just let you know, it's a dirty talk.
Deep talk.
Deep talk.
Yeah.
Gotcha. You heard it here first, then.
Well, you know, our second biggest audience actually is Japan. So
really?
Maybe people will listening in Japan will learn something new. Who knows?
Yeah.
That's cool.
That's okay. Cool. So we kind of discussed, you know, yokai and how they're different from like Japanese ghosts but what I want to know kind of, because like I said, you know, New Orleans and Japan, we have this connection with, you know, ghost stories and, you know, haunts and spooks and stuff like that. So like, what makes yokai so different and unique from other like monster creatures / ghosts from like other countries around the world? Like what makes Japan's yokai so different from everywhere else?
Okay. I do not know much about the creatures and monsters outside Japan. So I don't know if I can precisely answer for that question. But the yokai, as for yokai, the unique about yokai is that everything surrounding you has a potential to become yokai. So if you encounter something, unexplainable things or strange things, and if you can share with your experience to somebody else, it's like, oh my gosh, yeah, I had similar experiences. Oh yeah, I did too. That phenomena probably turn into a yokai. And that's one thing. Another thing is that yokai are not scary, as I said before. So it's not haunting. Things. The haunting things are basically ghosts. Yokai are weak. And then they don't. Haunting is more like yurei type of thing. And the yokai are more like characterization of some shared, it's not shared, yeah. But yeah, the shared experiences. Oh, yeah, I have a great example for you.
Oh, okay.
We have the group in Facebook called Yokai Attack, and the members of the Yokai Attack group, oh gosh, it came from all over the world, and everybody joined, and they talk about one thing, yokai. Anyway, there's one time that the cookie monster from the Sesame Street.
Okay, yeah, it
came up, and if the cookie monster is yokai or not. Well, the cookie monster is obviously, monster, obviously it's copyrighted, so he's not yokai, okay, period. But just forget about that part. Forget about the business part.
Yeah.
So they're discussing. And then my answer for that is that if cookie monster's name start with the capital C and then capital M, cookie monster, and he isn't yokai.
Wow.
He's only one. That's his name. But if the cookie monster is written with small letter C with small M, then he is one of cookie monsters. And then if you give a face to some kind of phenomena, losing cookies somebody bit my cookies or whatever. And then that small c, small m cookie monster are your guy.
Yeah. Does he just like cookies, or is he the personification of disappearing cookies? That was the big discussion. But you know, yokai tend to be named yokai. One of the key things about yokai, and this is different from yurei ghosts, is that you know, ghosts are named after the person who died, obviously, you know, whoever it is. But yokai tend to be named after what they are and what they do, you know. So yeah, it's they're as being personifications of strange things you can't explain. Yeah. You know, they don't really have names. They just are.
Yeah.
And, you know, as an example from way back in time, there's a phenomenon called Tengu Daoshi, which is like, it's like, this is crazy, but it's like, it's literally translated. It means Tengu crashing. And what that is the name for the concept of when you're walking in the forest and you hear a, like a, what sounds like a tree crashing down somewhere, but then you go and investigate and there's no tree. And, you know, back in time when Japan was way more forested than it is now, people would be walking in the woods and hear all sorts of things and like trees crashing, but couldn't explain it. And then when they shared, like Hiroko said, like, did you hear a tree crash? Yeah, I did too. But there's no tree out there. Oh, that's the Tengu Daoshi.
That must be.
You know, and it became the name for something somebody couldn't explain. So, again, like Hiroko just said, like when you wake up one morning and there's a big chew taken out of your cookie, and there's no explanation for that. Did the Cookie Monster do that? Like that's the yokai thinking. If you want it.
So now that you know that I don't want to break, you know, the child's heart, but yokai aren't something you see. Basically, there's a phenomena, and then the people name it.
Yeah.
And then share it. It's a code.
Yes.
That's what it's yokai is.
Yeah, they kind of they describe a negative space in a lot of ways. Yeah. You know,
and
they
laugh it off.
The absence of an explanation is filled by the yokai. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I'm just loving yokai even more. Like, oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah, but I have to say, Cookie Monster are not yokai. It's a copyrighted. Okay, copyrighted Sesame Street, period.
Okay, but what about Big Bird?
Okay. Yeah. See, I was thinking Oscar the Grouch.
Oscar the Grouch. See, yeah. But see, he has a name.
If he didn't have the name, the grouchy emotion.
Yes.
Maybe, you know.
Is he? Yes. Exactly. Is he one of a species that kind of indicates the irritability you have when dealing with garbage? You know. It's like, now we're getting way off course. Yeah.
This is
Sesame Street. Muppets are not yokai.
Sesame Street ice.
This is just a thought experiment.
I think we need to hold a whole episode on this. You know, Sesame Street yokai. You know,
Sesame Street or yokai.
this could be a whole debate. Absolutely. But
totally.
And we need to get in on that Facebook.
I think
that's another good point.
Yeah, definitely. That's Sesame.
Please join us.
Yeah.
Everybody talk about yokai.
Yeah, jump in. There's already like five. It's crazy. There's like 5,000 members now.
Heck
yeah. I mean, yeah. So please join. Join.
Yokai attack.
Yeah, wow.
Yep.
So many of the stories you mentioned date back to the Edo period. Would you say that the stories that we know of today, are they still distinct from that period, or have they progressed over time to include more modern yokai legends?
It's evolve.
Oh,
evolve.
Okay.
Just like anything else, say language, for example. Even the kudoshiji that he mentioned before, Japanese. But when you showed me kudoshiji right off the bat, I have a hard time. So because it's evolve. So the yokai is the same thing. The yokai stories evolve. I have a great example. Amabie. Have you guys heard Amabie? No. Okay.
So.
Can you?
Well, Amabie is a yokai that nobody really knew about for a long time. It was first described in the late 1800s in a newspaper article where a policeman reported in Kyushu he got a report of lights out at sea. And when he went to the beach to investigate, this yokai, this mermaid-like yokai manifested and said, "I am Amabie.
Draw me a picture.
Draw my picture and show it to the people if plague should come. And there will be a good harvest," and kind of predicting all this stuff, and then disappeared. And that was that for hundreds and hundreds of years. But then in 2020, when COVID-19 hit, somebody on Twitter in Japan resurrected this old story and drew a picture of Amabie and said, well, plague has come, so I'm going to draw Amabie. And then that really took off, and people all over Twitter started drawing their own takes on Amabie. And now Amabie has emerged as the mascot of the pandemic era. And Amabie is a kind of, it helps that Amabie is kind of cute. It's this, she's kind of
mermaid looking.
Mermaid like.
Three legs,
kind of scaly body and long hair, almost like the Starbucks mascot, if the Starbucks mascot were a yokai.
And so it's easy to understand, even though you're not Japanese. Mm-hmm. And then it viral with Twitter world everywhere. And then we noticed, I say, somewhere an Italian artist, I drew Amabie. And then his take of Amabie, you know, it's nothing to do. No, it's not, it's similar. It looks like a mermaid looking colorful, pretty, beautiful and everything. But still, if you compare the original, the drawing in a newspaper, it's different. And then that kind of stuff and happen everywhere. And then some kids drew it. Some kids, some ladies saw and using the cloth or knit and creating things. And of course, all the products or arts that they created are different because each product or art has their own take.
Right.
So it mutates. So imagine that, say, 1,000 years passed from now, and the people in 1,000 years future saw, the research in Amabie, and it popped out and say, you know, the person drew in somewhere in Russia or something like that. It was a totally different, you know, maybe the Amabie had 5 legs or something. Or maybe he had a body, the body of deer or something like that. And it's like, that's Amabie. And then
it takes off on its own.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
So, but that thing, actually, it's not, the Amabie case wasn't unique at all. So, you know, now we now once again, we have so many old yokai characters, and then we know. But that's not the answer. It's a muted version, and there's so many variations. And then so it's basically what we see today. It's just it's a density. The
like all of it together.
Distilled? You know, like you got alcohol.
Distilled into its modern form. Oh, but you know, it's yokai are kind of like they're kind of like memes in a lot of way, crossed with like the telephone game. So, you know, yokai have to be something kind of charming and interesting to get people's attention. And then they start talking about it. And then as they start talking about it or painting it or drawing it or interacting with it, it naturally changes. And so you get this kind of evolution. And since there's so long of a history for a lot of yokai, like Tengu, for instance, that's why in the beginning, when I believe it was Nigel asked, what are yokai? Hiroko was like, well, when? You know, when are you talking about, you know, what era? Because it really, there's no single answer to what, you know, a lot of these yokai are. It's just what it is right now.
Yeah. So pretty much like the yokai library is still expanding pretty much.
Always.
Yes. It evolves. And so the Amabie, once again, Amabie, today I often hear say, she is going to cure the plague. You know, according to the legend, she's an angel or something like that. But when you see that on the newspaper, she only said there was abundant harvest. There will be abundant harvest. And if there's a plague, draw me and show people. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. And we don't even know it's a she.
Yeah.
The gender is never specified.
And then another thing is there's a theory that maybe that some folklorist or academic mentioned that it's very possible that actually Amabie, the name, it's misspelled from Amabiko.
Because the E and the Ko.
E and the Ko really looking similar back then. Back then. Okay. No, it's not kind of, it's a kanji thing, but whatever the case is. Yeah. So once again, it's even if we're talking about the newspaper in 19th century, it could be miswritten.
Yeah. Wow.
So it's mutated. And so it's, you can, that's the fast fascinated by the fun part of the yoga, you can jump into the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
And then find all the stuff and enjoy it. But there's no right answer.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm getting more excited as we progress through this episode. Oh my God. Well, yeah. To progress with the episode, next I want to talk about just all of our favorites, because now I just kind of like want everyone to nerd out here. And probably you can imagine from my story that I previously told, my favorite yokai is actually Tengu. Just because I did have that initial like huge statue of a Tengu looking down on me. So I was like, yep, you're my favorite. But I don't know, just something about Tengu. I really like the mystery behind them and the fact that, like, kind of like what Matt said, you know, if anything went wrong, like in the mountains, you know, they kind of always, you know, blamed it on the Tengu. And you know, if someone were to tell me mountains or beach, I would always say mountains because I can't do beaches.
Oh, just like Hiroko.
Yeah, I'm not a beach person. And, you know, mountains. The first time that I went to Japan, you know, it's the same as Nigel, you know, I did the study abroad in Kyoto for the summer. And Kyoto, in northern Kyoto, they have the Kurama Temple.
Yes.
In the mountains. And that is like a temple that's really connected to Tengu, and so just my love for Tengu with my like placement in Kyoto just deepened my love for Tengu so much. And I just so like if there's any like anime or manga about Tengu, I'm like all on that. I love Tengu so much. Nigel, what is your favorite? Because you and I, even though I love yokai, I don't think I've ever talked to you about yokai before.
Yeah, I don't think so. I have to clarify, is this even a yokai? Because I think it is, but now I'm thinking, okay, it has a name,
okay,
so maybe it isn't. But my favorite is actually Yuki-onna.
Okay. Yeah.
Does that count?
No, Yuki-onna is a yokai.
Yeah,
yeah. Kind of a borderline.
It's borderline, yokai. But it is yokai.
Okay, so that's interesting. Yeah. So yeah, that has been my favorite because of that was my favorite story from Kwaidan. Lafcadio heard Kwaidan.
Lafcadio.
Well, yes. New Orleans.
Yeah.
New Orleans.
There it is again. One of my favorite stories. I really loved Diplomacy as well, that from that collection, the Kwaidan story. But Yuki-onna was definitely one that I've read that one probably the most of any of the stories.
Yeah, it was a really good story.
But you live in the city where you're least likely to encounter her.
I know.
All from America. You need to probably move into the mountains or something.
Oh, no, that's why it's my favorite. I don't have to encounter her.
Yeah, but
it wouldn't be.
She's Lafcadio O'Hearn was one of the first disseminators of yokai lore into English through his books at the turn of the 20th century. But like he didn't have the word yokai, like it hadn't been established yet. So he didn't really like he told these stories in a really great way. Like they're amazing, but they're kind of not really contextualized as yokai stories. He calls them like in ghostly Japan.
Yeah.
And he didn't have the concept. It hadn't really been, the Japanese hadn't really clearly articulated it even to themselves, I think. At that point, it was right kind of on the cusp when they were becoming characters. So it's interesting. It's but Kwaidan is so great.
Yeah. And you know, I think one of the reasons that now looking back on it, I'm like, okay, is it more of you? Because almost in that story, you know, Yuki-onna comes across as a thing that can appear to you, but it also somewhat feels like an actual person, like a specific thing that there might be only one that is navigating this road looking for people, you know? So that's why I was like, okay, well, maybe it actually isn't, but we're gonna say it is. So Yuki-onna.
Yeah, let's say it is.
But it is.
Okay.
She's cool in all senses of the word.
Yes, yes.
Because if you see the writing of Yuki-onna, it's snow woman.
Right.
Yes. Very generic.
Yes.
And then that's right there. It's another the point that she, you know, she is you know,
a personification of the dangers of freezing to death in the mountains, I guess you could say.
Yes. And yeah, then, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And then also, I guess there's the element of telling someone something that you, I don't know, swore not to tell, you know, cause she comes back.
Yeah. Yeah. It's classic.
Yes.
Yeah. Kind of a Pandora's box sort of thing.
Yeah. So that's my favorite. Hiroko, what is your favorite? I know that that might be a very hard one.
My favorite yokai all time is Kuchisake Onna.
Yes.
The slashed mouth woman. She is actually the most modern, newest yokai. This slashed mouth woman. She's wearing a gauze mask like we do today. But back in she was very popular in 1970s. So, and then the time period wearing a gauze mask are not that popular. But anyway, so here's a story that generic form. So she is a woman wearing a white gauze mask, and it comes up to you and say, "Am I pretty?"
Oh, wow.
if you say no, she's going to kill you on the spot. If you answer her yes, and then she pulls out her mask and reveals her slashed mouth and say, "Do you think I'm still pretty?" And then she's gonna kill you anyway, just like her mouth. Okay, that's the basic story. Anyway,
with a knife.
Yeah. So there's another, the background stories are like, say, you know, she got to some kind of oral surgery accident or something like that. And then she got, that's why she got a face. That's why she's scared of the stink of pomade.
Yeah. Hair gel.
Yeah. Hair gel.
And I kind of, the dentist who messed her up had it.
All kinds of, the funniest things. But anyway, the basic story is that caused huge hysteria throughout Japan. Kids freaked out. It's like, I even PlayStation got a phone call. It's like, I think I saw the Kuchisake Onna, the slashed mouth woman. You got to arrest her, that kind of thing. So I was an elementary school kids, but I knew kind of already, you know, she's not really, she doesn't exist. But I half believed, and I didn't believe either. But I wanted to believe because it was so much fun to talk about how to survive if we encounter slash mouth woman. So because we heard, and every day we shared, all the new information, the survival tactics. And then she's, sounds like she's, she's, her favorite food is candy. It's like, okay, let's throw candies and then run. Oh, you can't do that because she can run 100 meters for 3 seconds, which is crazy. I mean, way faster than Usain Bolt. Okay, let's run the zigzag thing, that kind of thing. Oh, every day we talked.
Don't forget the Lamborghini.
Oh, yeah. So
she had a Lamborghini.
Okay. So, but she's wearing red, bright red Lamborghini. But the thing is, because we live in Tokyo, that's why. When I, when we shared all the funny stories after we grew up, a friend of ours, it's from Awajishima Island. Kobe. Of Kobe. Of course, he lives in an island. She wouldn't drive a Lamborghini. So she's riding a boat.
Every morning, he says.
Yeah, every morning she rides a boat.
The ferry.
The ferry. So he and his kids, basically he was riding on a friend's bike. And then they just cycled it to the port. And then away. And they see if she comes out of the ferry. So that's the memories that I had is such a sweet and fun and funny. Yeah. So it's my favorite yokai is slashed mouth.
And woman. You can see that telephone game style thing, right? Where like the kids are embellishing it, and then like, oh, I heard from this kid and this, my brother's cousin's sister said like kind of stuff, So it's really funny.
Yeah, but the good thing, the good thing is that it was pre-internet. Basically, internet killed yokai.
Oh, really?
I would say. Yeah, because new form, creating a new form, because Amabia, for example, is mutated in a different way, but it's different. Maybe I'm just too old for this. I don't know. If you get the internet, it's too easy. Too easy. You can share any information and stuff like that. But it's mutated. It's just totally different things. But when the slush mouth woman, you know, became bad, I guess.
Yeah.
The only reliable sources, and it came from word, rumor. And once again, you see, it's a telephone game. So it just... involved. And if you talk about kids, you know, of course you don't remember 100%, and of course, you know, of course they added more stuff to, you know, to make sound funny, but still that's a valuable sources, and we discussed it, and it was fun.
I'm so glad that's your favorite, because that's like my second favorite.
Oh,
so.
Wow.
Oh, she's great. She's really perfect. Great.
And I just have to say, what happened to them being weak? Okay,
right? Yeah, but she's kind of a. So she kind of skirts the line between yokai and urban legend.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, like, because I'm sure you guys, we all grew up in America with, like, you know, stories of urban legend, like murderer kind of things. But, you know, in the West, you know, our scary presences tend to be kind of all like axe murderers, or like a dude in a hockey mask with like a knife, or like, you know, Freddy, you know. Oh, but in Japan, they tend to be these more sort of yokai like presences. It's interesting.
Is she? Because if probably there was the fork of the road, so to speak.
Fork in the road. Yeah.
So to speak. And then the slashed mouth woman took the cute, you know, even though what she does in the story is not really cute, but to turn it into a character,
yeah,
a mascot, even like a scary, not scary, but you know, I think it's a level of scariness. If it's too scary, it's not funny, but if it's a hint of scariness, it's fun and like a little spice. Yeah. And then I think this mouse slashed woman, they had a hint of scariness. And
she's not dark.
It's not dark. Because, I mean, imagine she's scared of stink of pomade.
Yeah.
Loves candies, you know. And then, I mean, you can imagine how she runs if she can run 3 seconds for... can run for 100 meters for 3 seconds.
Yes.
I mean,
but also like the whole thing, like slashing your mouth with a machete is so like over the top. Right. It's not like, you know, some guy bursts into a room and shoots you 5 times with a gun. That's like, that could actually happen. You know, I don't think there's ever been a case where like a woman comes out of a Lamborghini with a machete and like chops somebody's mouth wide open. You know, like
I think the Lamborghini really takes the edge off, you know.
Red, it's bright red.
Oh, yes. Even more so.
Of course.
And I've actually watched a film about Kuchisaki Onna.
Oh, right.
I see.
Right. There's many, I think, actually.
I've seen two of films. I think there was like an older version, and then I watched the newest, latest version of it. Nigel, I know you're a film buff. Totally check out her movies. They're great. I love creepy stuff, well, so it's perfect.
Wow.
Definitely.
So, Matt, you're the last one. What's your favorite yokai?
Oh, geez. Yeah. Wow. My favorite yokai. My favorite yokai, you know, I tend to like the weirder ones more than the scarier ones. There's a really classic Edo era yokai called Tofu Kozo, who's like Tofu Boy. And like, he's not even scary. Imagine like this little dude running out with a plate of tofu. Like, and he come around the corner and I'm like, why is this a yokai? Like, why is this creepy? And there's a whole story about why Tofu Boy is a yokai, but he's considered part of the pantheon of all of these spooky, crazy creatures, and yet he's so unthreatening. He's like, just on the face of him, he's unthreatening. And of course, like, you know, in classic yokai style, well, if you eat the tofu, you die, or like, you know, blah, blah, blah. But dude, we're talking about a kid with a block of tofu. It's like the least threatening thing you can think of. So that's, those kind of yokai to me are really funny because they show just how, you know, diverse the pantheon of yokai are. Like, they run their gamut from like totally terrifying monstrous things all the way down to stuff like that. So
yeah, the charm.
Tofu
that's
boy. Charm. Yes. Think solid. About tofu boy next time you're enjoying tofu.
I know, solid choice there. So the last question here really is, we know that there are certain pilgrimages in Japan that people take, I'd say probably a lot of tourists, but maybe a lot of natives as well, to places based on anime and Studio Ghibli locations. But are there real places and pilgrimages that people can go and visit for yokai stories?
Yes. Actually, since you like Tengu, have you visited Mount Takao before?
I have not.
Okay.
Okay. Better than Kurama Temple?
You went to a very old.
Yeah.
Yeah, old. And actually, it's another place, it's, I would say. But anyway, I was planning to introduce Mount Takao. It's a mountain, but in Tokyo. So it's easy access. It's about 1 hour away from downtown Tokyo and in the habitat of Tengu.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh. Yeah, you have to.
Yeah. Anyway, so I guess I have to explain what Tengu.
Yeah, we never explained what Tengu is. Yes.
You know well, but still, I'd like to. Okay, because I wrote down some, like on my cheat sheet. So, okay. So Tengu are spirits of the mountains. They are humanoid, muscular, and dressed in monk's clothing with big wings, either long noses or the bird-like beaks. They have a large fan made of leaves, which creates a gust of the wind. And they wear one-tooth geta sandals. One-tooth.
Tough to
balance. And they are spirits of mountains.
Yeah. So yeah, Mount Takao is like that's a huge habitat of them. That's
yeah, really it's a great it's not haunting area.
Yeah.
There is actually a temple on the top of it. And I can't emphasize more than enough. It's a holy ground. But it's great for hiking. And you will see the many Tengu statues, masks. I mean, huge masks. The with long nose one and the raven looking one, the bird looking, yeah. I guess, looking one, and then all kinds of the Tengu related things. Ooh, I have to. If you happen to go to Mount Takao, they sell the sponge cake shaped like Tengu face.
Yes.
The bird Tengu. The sponge.
It's got anko bean paste on the inside. It's good.
Oh, so
it's
every good. Time I go there, I always buy and eat it. And so you have to have it.
Yeah, definitely. Also, it's really, that area is really well known for soba noodles. So like you can kind of make a day of it. You can go out and you can have like soba noodles and look for Tengu. Wow. Yeah, no, it's good. It's good.
So Tengu is not even my top, but I'm sold anyway.
You can't see yokai, but you can go to their habitats. So especially the kind of ones that are associated with nature. So there's a lot of places like that. There's also Tono, the city of Tono, which is up north, and that's like really associated with kappa. And like they sell kappa fishing licenses where you go out with like a cucumber and try to catch them in the river, like for kids.
Wow. That's so cool.
Yeah, or if you're an insane adult like me, you know, you can
do it. Tono is a village that has so many yokai stories. And a folklorist, the Yanagita Kuniyo, he went there. And then he collected all the yokai stories from the local villagers, and he published a book in 20th century. It's called Tono Monogatari, The Tales of Tono.
And it's actually, you can get an English edition now. It's the tales.
If you see.
I think it's called The Legends of Tono in English, I think is the translation of the title. But it's in tales. It's the same thing.
Anyway, the Tono is the place where I took him to Matt.
Yeah.
And then if you like monsters, if you like kaiju, if you like robots, you know, you would like yokai. And then I went and I brought him to the kappa temple.
Yeah.
Here's a kappa.
Yeah.
That's yoga. And Tono is the place.
It all started there.
Yeah, it just all started there.
Oh, yeah.
There's your pilgrimage. Go to Mount Takao and then jump on the train and go to Tono. It's a long distance. It's a very long distance.
Kurama. Kurama is another
Kurama's a good
beautiful
one too.
Destination too. Yeah.
And so you mentioned that the ones you mentioned just a few minutes ago, they're not haunted, but do most of these places that the pilgrimages, do they have a reputation of being haunted?
Haunting is in general speaking, haunted is associated with ghosts, not yokai.
Okay.
Yeah. And yokai, these tend to be more like fun experiences, you know, like there's a street in downtown Kyoto called Ichijo Dori, which is where the yokai were said to parade like 1,000 years ago. And like 1,000 years ago, it was probably, you know, considered to be a terrifying place. Now it's not. It's like really cute. There's all these like yokai kind of like sculptures and statues. And they have like it's called a Mononoke Ichi, a Mononoke market every month. Or they did before, you know, COVID-19. So yokai spots tend to be fun places to visit. They're not really like dark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know? I can't see you really making Tofu Man that dark, right?
No, Tofu Man is not dark. Maybe there's time for a gritty, dark reboot, but not yet.
Yokai are more like a moderator.
Oh, that's a good way
for the painful things. Like say Kappa, for example. You know, there's a river. I mean, it's always danger. Any type of rivers, small or big or whatever, it's always danger of getting drowned. And so the, you know, instead of saying, oh, don't go there or don't swim in there, you get drowned to death. Instead of saying that, Papa, watch out. You may encounter Kappa there.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then the kids imagine whatever the Kappa look like in their mind, you know, but still the message is just do not go to the river by themselves or be careful. When you go close to the river, or be careful if you swim, kind of thing. It's a moderator, used as a moderator for the actual danger things. Or so it's a good thing. It's a good thing. Yes.
Yeah. In contrast to a lot of our like American stories, where I don't see really any redeeming quality of Candyman or Bloody Mary. No.
Yeah. Oh, don't talk about Bloody Mary that way. Well, I think it's ironic bringing things back to New Orleans. It's interesting that the first chronicler of yokai stories in English, Lafcadio Hearn, is also the first chronicler of like voodoo stories. Mm. Like he is the one who brought Marie Laveau into the spotlight in the late 1800s. So there's an interesting, you know, kind of crossover between yokai lore and yokai fandom and your fine city.
Our guy Lafcadio keeps on delivering.
Yes, he does. He's always there. He's a kind of a yokai, or he can't be because he has a name. But I like to think of him as hanging out with the yokai now.
Yeah, indeed.
I think he'd be happy with that outcome too. So.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Awesome. Well, this was an enjoyable conversation. I don't think I'm going to be able to go to bed tonight. I'm just like hyped up on so many like yokai stories. So exciting. Same.
Go watch Kwaidan again for the 97th time. Right?
But, you know, to our listeners, you know, definitely check out Yokai Attack, the Japanese Monster Survival Guide that Hiroko published. It's a really great one. Also, join that Facebook group, Yokai Attack. I'm going to be joining it. You bet I'm going to be joining it.
Join up.
But Hiroko, can our listeners follow you anywhere on social media?
Twitter at Ninetale_FoxCute.
Go, that's just tough to remember. Put it in the show notes.
Gotcha.
We got you covered.
We'll definitely have the links in our description of this episode for sure. But thank you so much, Hiroko and Matt, for joining us for this episode and talking with us about yokai during this spooky season of Halloween. We really appreciate it. And I know I appreciate it a lot. Yokai's like,
thank you. Thank you for inviting us.
Yes, we want to go back to New Orleans.
Like I said, next time y'all are down here, let us know. The crew and I will be happy to show you around.
We will.
Thank you. We will.
We will.
Definitely we will.
Let's.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on, guys.
Thank you.
And that's a wrap on this week's episode. Thank you so much for joining us in our deep dive into the world of yokai. Again, we'd like to thank our special guests for this episode, Hiroko Yoda and Matt Ault. Over the course of this episode, not only did they take us on a journey through the origins of yokai and how they've changed throughout the years, but also on what distinguishes them from ghosts and other scary stories and urban legends in other cultures around the world. We also talked about the importance of yokai in modern day society, our favorite yokai, and also sites that you can actually visit in Japan where yokai actually inhabit. If this episode was intriguing to you, definitely check out Hiroko Yoda and Matt Ault's amazing book, Yokai Attack, the Japanese Monster Survival Guide. And of course, we want to hear from you, our listeners. Have you ever heard of yokai before this episode? If you have, what's your favorite? Share it with us on our social media. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Crew of Japan Podcast. That's KREWEOFJAPAN Podcast. We really hope you enjoyed today's journey. Happy Halloween, and we'll see you next week.